ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We are reading today on the wonderful pastimes of Srimad Bhagavatam. What does it say on the top there? Can someone say beautiful Bhagavat Purana? There's even some message at the bottom, but I can't read it from here. That's 11:9. Another. That's the last.
Is it the last number? It's not.
Pardon?
Anyway,
whatever it is, there's a message at the bottom. It says Monday. But it's not Monday. Is it Monday?
No,
not Monday. Out of date message. Danor!
Is it
text 24, is that right?
Yeah.
Text 24, the 54th chapter of the 10th canto. Danor! Vikshriya! Vikrisha! Excuse me, Vikrisha! Sudidam Jagne Krishnam Kripi Sharai Aha Chatra Shanam Tishta Yadunam Kulapangsana Kulapangsana Dana Vikrishya Sudridam Jagne Krishnam Tribhi Sharehi Ahachatrakshanam Tishta Yadunankula Pongsana Dano Vikrishya Sudhidam Jagne Krishnam Tribhi Sharehi Aha chatra kshanam tishta Vidunam kula pamsana Duna vikrishya sudhidam Jagne krishnam tribhisharai Aha chatra kshanam tishta Yadunam kulapangsana. His bow. Vikrisha. Drawing. Again, another English word. Drawing can mean several things. It wasn't that Rukmi was drawing with his pen. Drawing some pictures of Krishna or something with his pen. He was drawing his, what was he doing? Drawing his bow. Not to paint pictures of Krishna, but to try to do something else to Krishna. That was his intention. Drawing. Sue. Very. Dudham, firmly. Jagne, he struck. Krishnam, Lord Krishna, Tribhi, with three Sharai, arrows. Aha, he said. Cha, and Atra, here. Kshanam, a moment. Tishta, stand. Many meanings of stand, other meanings of stand also. Yadinang, of the Yadus. Kula, of the dynasty. Pangsana, O corrupter. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Not by Srila Prabhupada directly, by Srila Prabhupada's disciples and devotees. Well, he was heading up the team, but he wasn't the only one. He was one of a team. So Rukmi, we were hearing a bit about this yesterday in Srimad Harishwari Prabhu's class about Prabhupada engaging other devotees in translation and editing work of his Srimad Bhagavatam translation and commentaries, especially in the translation and the word for word and like that, so that he could get on with his purport. So Rukmi drew his bow with great strength and struck Lord Krishna with 3 arrows. Then he said, "Stand here for a moment, O defiler of the Yadu dynasty. You have defiled the Yadu dynasty, a noble race or a noble dynasty, and you have engaged like this. You've kidnapped Rukmi in the methodology of the Rakshasa. What disgraceful behavior from you, Krishna." Well, I'm not surprised. It's not surprising. Anyone who knows about you can expect such behavior from such an uncultured, such a, you know, say, such a lowly person as you. You were like a thorn in the side of the Yadu dynasty, and you should be removed immediately. Just stand here so I can relieve the Yadu dynasty of your presence. Relieve the world. I have come to deliver the world from all of the, as the Krishna say, Parijanaya, Sadhana, Vinasya, Chidushkam, Vinasya, Chidushkam. I have come to destroy Dushkritas like you, inauspicious rascals like you. I have come to kill you, Krishna. You deserve it. Now stand there so that I can do a service to the universe, to the world. Why are you running away, proving, as we heard the other day, that you are definitely not only a cowherd of cows, but you are also a coward on the battlefield. You ran away from Jarasandha when he was defeating you, and now you're running away from me. Come, stand here and just feel my... you should feel fortunate to be killed by me. He was a little bit overwhelmed with pride. And he told Krishna, "You stand still. Just stand there." And we don't generally... Of course, this again is very unique. In loving exchanges, in the different rasas there, so the indirect... This is indirect rasa, where Rukmini is angry, showing anger towards Krishna. That also may happen, and it's like in loving affairs sometimes. The wife may be married to the Prime Minister. They have Prime Minister or President in Australia? Prime Minister. She may be married. I don't know if the Prime Minister is married, but maybe he's got a wife, and the wife will say, "Come here! Come here! Come over here! What are you doing? Come here!" She may say to her husband, and he's the Prime Minister, right? If anyone else would say that, it would definitely not fit the... we were hearing about court jesters a little bit yesterday, but in general, that's not... no one else can say that to the Prime Minister. "Come here! Do what I say!" Right? Isn't it? But his wife, maybe his children also, they may say like that. We have a very intimate and sweet relationship. And on the other side, if someone else says it in an indirect way, then it results in something else altogether. If someone else, "Well, I heard his wife say that, why can't I say it too?" You know, or something ignorant. So, or somebody out of anger will say to the Prime Minister, "Come here, you!" And then they'll get arrested, maybe put to death in some countries. And this is Rukmini's mood, indirect. He hasn't got that favorable mood. Rukmini may be able to say to Krishna, "You come here right now. I want you right now. Do what I say." Especially Satyabhama. Krishna was very henpecked. Husband, Satyabhama was his, as you can say, his most... Of course, Rukmini is his head queen, but he had the most, you can say, romantic relationship with Satyabhama. He was totally henpecked by Satyabhama. And that's another story. We'll get back to Rukmi and his fun here on the in relationship with Krishna, showing the results of the indirect relationship. We can't imitate the pure devotees. One's mood towards Krishna is one of these secondary, predominantly secondary. The secondary relations with Krishna are very nice if they are subservient to the primary relationships. Just like some of our devotees, they like to cook. How many of you are cooks? Who likes cooking? I'm sure many of you like to cook. Who likes cooking? Nobody? One or two? Only two? I'm not going to ask you to cook, don't worry. But who likes cooking? Only two of the ladies like cooking? My goodness. None of the men know how to play mridanga. None of the ladies like to cook. What's going on here? Yeah, I think the men, you should learn how to cook, and all the ladies should learn the mridanga. Okay, so you have to teach these. No one could play the mridanga. You have to have mridanga lessons for the devotees. You should try to arrange some mridanga lessons so that more devotees can play mridanga. All the pressure's on you all the time on Harinam. Every time I go on Harinam, you're the only one who plays the mridanga. But Krishna Graja, where is he? He's not here, but when he comes out, he plays also. But it's nice to learn the mridanga unless you're young. I missed on that golden opportunity. I tried a few times, it didn't quite work. But if you can, when you're young especially, learn to play the mridanga. And ladies, Prabhupada wanted ladies, if possible, to learn to cook nicely. Learn to cook nicely. Sometimes when devotees cook, and not just devotees, when sometimes people cook, they like to cook in various ways. And I'm very familiar with South Indian. Any South Indian devotees here from South? You're from South India, from Andhra, aren't you? Andhra Pradesh? You look like from Andhra. You also from Andhra? Yeah, kind of South India, but when you go a step further, you get to Tamil Nadu. And in Tamil Nadu, they are very, very, it's like extreme, I suppose you could say. Not the Brahmins, but the general people. Maybe not so much in Tamil Nadu, but the Tamils who've left India, especially Malaysia. Malaysia probably beats the world in that. They're probably champions of the world. Even the Tamil devotees, when they come to Malaysia, can't take the prasadam, practically. It is so hot. It is so spicy. They put more spices in than vegetables. What's the sabji today? Mustard seed sabji today, with a few potatoes mixed in. Mustard seed and chili powder sabji. You call, here in Australia, you have curd sabji. It's not really a sabji. Sabji means vegetable. You can say a curd sabji. What is that curd sabji? Give me the curd. Isn't it? I was talking to Harry Story probably yesterday, and he was in his kitchen. I said, "Here's the kitchen." He said, "It's good old Australian kitchery," he said. I said, "It's got lots of curd in it." He said, "Thank God it hasn't got curd in it, at least." There was a time when they used to make khichdi with huge chunks of curd in the khichdi. Everything, khichdi. Even the khichdi in the pakoras, you have the curd pakoras. Curd in everything. The dal, curd in the dal. Curd in everything.
Proteins.
Huh?
Proteins.
Proteins, yeah. We heard about these protons. Yeah, but then you'll turn into a proton. If you take too many proteins, you become a proton. So, the spices are there. They have a very valuable purpose. But if they become prominent, then the result is another thing altogether. So similarly, the indirect relationship with Krishna, in loving, when it's pure, when the loving relationship is the prominent one, they also have their part to play in spicing the loving relationship. Just like in many ordinary dealings between husband and wife even sometimes, there's a little spicy part to it as well. It's not just all roses. There's a few thorns sometimes, but that helps to increase the sweetness of the roses. It becomes sweet, and sometimes the wife, does something which, whatever. Usually it's the husband. The husbands are naughty usually. They try to irritate their wives sometimes purposely. I mean, it's maybe not so, science is not so known now, but it increases the sweetness of their relationship and their appreciation and so many things. And there are many different types of ways. And the wife, of course, is maybe in her mood, sometimes not so much now maybe, but always are concerned in every way, a little fear sometimes there, sometimes of losing her husband, or whatever it may be. These different little lower relationships come in, but the prominent one is a complete love of the other person, right? In different ways. Sometimes they play tricks on each other to have some fun, or to, you know, enjoy, like Krishna did with Rukmini. With Rukmini, Krishna purposely tried to irritate her like anything. And of course, there are three different types of wives described in the Nectar of Devotion. One wife is one who's totally submissive, and that is Rukmini. No matter what the husband says, she always remains submissive. That's one type. They're not perhaps so prominent nowadays. But there's another type, like Satyabhama. She's like fire. If she doesn't get what she says, she gets the heaviest frying pan out and whacks it on her husband's head, full swing. She can't tolerate anything like that. That's the mood of Radharani also. Satyabhama is in the mood of Radharani. Radharani can't tolerate if she hears that Krishna has dared to even receive anything, even a gift from Chandravali. Radharani goes into fume. She goes into... The anger gets so intense that she doesn't even manifest it. She just goes into a totally, almost a non-reciprocal sulk, not allowing anyone to have any access practically. Even Ladita and Vishakha are desperately trying to resolve the problems. But she goes so deep into her mood of anger with Krishna, she doesn't even want to hear his name. If he even should receive even a piece of paper from Chandravali, what to speak of be with her? This is the jealous anger of Radharani, which manifests in Satyabhama in the affairs of Dwarka. Whereas Rukmini is more like Chandravali, who is extremely submissive and thankful for whatever little mercy she receives from her beloved. Anyway, like this. So, sometimes, especially in these different relationships, Krishna, he wanted to see, but Rukmini wouldn't get angry. She fainted. She couldn't bear Krishna's words telling her that you've married her, you should go and find another husband. I'm not qualified for you. You made a mistake. Shishupal, I'm sure he'll still accept you. He was going on like this, you know. And Rukmini couldn't tolerate it. What is this? Is he serious or what? What's going on here? And eventually she just fainted. And Krishna, of course, then took a different mood and then showed his full love and affection towards Rukmini in another way. So these are all parts of transcendental love, which do filter down into this universe and in a perverted way. And unfortunately, when the indirect rasa is overwhelming, sometimes it becomes overwhelming, it creates nothing but destruction. And generally speaking, in this material world, the indirect rasas are more prominent. So there's so much negativity in relationships. One thing is, I would suggest, and those who are a little bit mature in Krishna consciousness especially, and those who are interested in relationships in family life, which, you know, we all have to live, and in this world we all have to have relationships. The Nectar of Devotion has how many chapters, Keshe? But altogether. No, generally devotees don't know what happens after chapter 19. After chapter 19, that is untouched. What was that? What's he doing on the altar there? Pardon? Transcendental activities going on the altar. Something fell down? What fell down? A picture fell down. Can you see that, Jitendra? Be careful. So we usually stop at chapter 19, which is, Prabhupada has indicated that there's, you know, we cannot really enter into the topics beyond chapter 19 with realization necessary. But nonetheless, Prabhupada wanted us to read it. He wrote the book for his devotees to read. So to read the whole Nectar of Devotion is very purifying. And even if we can't understand it, one thing you do pick up in these sections on rasas and rasabhas, rasabhas means incompatible relationships, is that in rasabhas there is so much amazing psychology. The entire psychology there is nothing different, only it's pure in the spiritual realm. It's exactly what's going on here. When one understands the science of rasabhas, it's quite easy to see why different persons don't get along with each other and what to do to adjust it. Everything is there in Nectar Devotion when it comes to social psychology or psychology between male and female, between friends, parents and children. Everything is there in the Nectar Devotion. Of course, to understand it and to apply it, that requires some realization. But nonetheless, one can appreciate that actually everything has its roots and origins in the spiritual world. It's just that relationships in this material world have become perverted by the reflections. Instead of the relationship being a relationship with Krishna, it's reflected with me in the center. So therefore you get all kinds of different combinations and permutations of these relationships and ultimately, of course, they all end up in coming to an end in one way or another. They're not permanent relationships. Only relationships in relationship with Krishna are permanent. So this Nectar of Devotion indicates all these various indirect relationships and how they should be engaged positively and how they can be favorable in our devotional service. This is a great science of Nectar of Devotion. We generally don't reach that, but at some point in time, devotees will, I'm sure, we have courses on the first 19 chapters, and later, for those who are perhaps a little more experienced or mature, then on the last sections of the Nectar of Devotion also. It's a very important book. Prabhupada said it's our Bible. It's our Bible. We don't want to be stuck in the Old Testament. We want to go, we're supposed to advance in Krishna consciousness. There's a very short purport here by Prabhupada. Shridhar Swami points out that Kula Pangsana may be understood as a combination of the words Kulapa, or O master of the Yadu dynasty, and Unksana, O expert killer of enemies. The Acharya gives the grammatical details that make this interpretation possible. So the words here, Kula Pangsana, which means defiler of the Yadu dynasty, according to Rukmi, he's used that meaning. Now, one of the reasons I mention these words, like in English, where we have stand can also mean a few different things, or Vikrisha, drawing, can mean a few things, and we mentioned right the other day, having many different meanings. Similarly, in some Sanskrit, even more so, and it takes expertise to know which meaning is appropriate. So here we see Rukmi has taken one meaning, or has applied it in one way, that you are the defiler of the Yadu dynasty. Whereas in the purport, Srila Sridhara Swami has said that actually it means the master of the Yadu dynasty and one who is expert at killing enemies. There's so many different similar kind of things that come up all the time in Krishna's dealings. And these also take place sometimes in the loving exchanges. This play on words when Krishna is sometimes with Radharani. What is that word? Vaish, isn't it? Vaish. Different words. What is your dress? There are many different meanings to the word. I can't remember. It's Nectar of Devotion. These things are described, And everything that Radharani asks, Krishna answers in a different meaning of the word. It's very interesting. So that's the end of that particular purport. I don't think there's any extra purport in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Let's have a look. He's written anything. Text number, what is it? 54? No. 24. 24, here we go. Well, let's read it anyway. Same thing he mentions here. He says, Kula Pongsana can mean, O defiler of your dynasty. But according to the inspiration of Sarasvati, Kula Pongsana may be understood as a combination of the words Kulapa, O protector of the Yadu dynasty, and Angsana, O expert killer of enemies. Atukshanam Tishta can mean stand here for a moment. It can also mean Arak Ikshanam Tishta. Stand still so that I may glance upon you. So you can take it positively. Rukmi is saying, stand still, I want to see you. Or stand still, I want to kill you. Anyway, he'll be killed by Krishna standing there and getting a vision. In one sense, he doesn't get killed here and then. But in one sense, our material desires can be killed by having the opportunity to see Krishna. Yatra yasi, text 25. Yatra yasi svasarane musitva dvangshavadavai harishe dhya madang manda mainakutayodinaha. We carry on with these wonderful words of praise of Rukmi. They're very sweet. Make a nice drama. I don't know if you've ever done this drama. Have you put this drama on here in Melbourne yet? The kidnapping of Rukmini. Have you ever done this drama here? Yeah, the Bhaktivedanta players in London, they put it on quite often. Very popular drama, this, the kidnapping of Rukmini. A very nice pastime. There was one time also talking about Rukmini, maybe I mentioned it the other day, I don't know, when we were talking about Kundina, the Kundinapur. Rukmini was one time reacted slightly differently to Krishna's taunting. When Krishna was in Dwarka, he would always be, he could not, even though he was in Dwarka, and you can say externally he was in the mood of Aishwarya Bhav, but internally he was always in Madhurya Bhav. He was always absorbed in the mood of the gopis, or in remembrance, not the mood of the gopis, but in remembering the gopis. He couldn't forget the gopis for a moment in Dwarka, and sometimes it would come out externally and he would start calling out the names of the gopis and lamenting for their absence or their separation. And this was known to Rukmini, and she was feeling somewhat slighted, you can imagine, that Krishna was, even in the night she would hear him sometimes calling out in distress and separation from Vrindavan, from his devotees in Vrindavan, and especially the gopis. So she was feeling, and then during the day, of course, Krishna would be most of the time. What was the name? Sudharma? What was the name of the hall where they used to have their governmental meetings? Sudharma. Huh? Sudharma. It is Sudharma. The Sudharma, this hall, this building which was created, Vishwakarma created it, wasn't it? Vishwakarma. A very special place which was there in Dwarka where there would be no effect of past and future, no passing of time as long as you were there. In that hall, a very special place, and Krishna would spend the day there with the leaders of the Yadu dynasty, and they would be discussing whatever they were discussing, different meetings or whatever it was. So much of the time, Rukmini was thinking this. When Krishna's home with me, he's thinking of the gopis, and then during the day, he's there with his, associates in the Siddharma meeting hall. What about me? Where do I stand? I seem to be second fiddle here. So. She asked Krishna about this situation, and Krishna said, "Well, he said, I cannot tolerate a moment. Actually speaking, to tell you the truth, I cannot tolerate being separate from my devotees in Vrindavan or even my friends here in the Yadu dynasty. I might be able to tolerate being separate from my wife, but I can never be tolerate being separate from my friends and my devotees." So you can imagine how she felt. You can't go much further down the line than that. So then Rukmini, that was it. She just went, packed her bags and was off. She was gone. And she went off. And sometimes there's two different stories. One story says that she went to Kundina first to see her father, Bhishma. Usually that's what happens. They usually go home to mom and dad in these situations. And they come back together later on. But she then actually, whether she went directly or indirectly, she ended up in Pandapur. And there she performed intense austerity. She thought, that's enough, I've had enough of this family life. There's nothing but misery in this family life. Anyone's own husband creates so much disturbance to me. I'm just going to be a sadhvi now. So she stayed there for some time. Krishna Of course, I mean, when he found out she'd gone, then he went searching after her. He went all over the place searching for her, and he found out she was in Pandapur. And then he tried to woo her, and she said, she came there and said, "Hey, who are you? Get out of here. I'm a renunciate. I'm a sadvi. I don't have anything to do with men. Get away. I don't know who you are. I've never seen you before. Get out of here." He just told Krishna to get lost. So Krishna was not, and then of course Krishna then when he had his mood of feeling tense separation, and he was very disturbed. Anyway, the story goes on, there's a long story, but that was the only time that I've heard about where Rukmini really couldn't tolerate Krishna's behavior and taunting. Otherwise she was the emblem of tolerance, perfect wife. And anyway, where are we now? Text number 25. Here we go. Rukmi Uvacha, Shri Rukmi Uvacha. There we go. It's more nectarian words here to purify us. We shouldn't imitate these words. "Wherever you go, carrying off my sister like a crow, stealing sacrificial butter, I will follow you. This very day I shall relieve you of your false pride. You fool, you deceiver, you cheater in battle." Krishna is a great cheat. In one sense, all these things are true. Very true. There's truth in all these words. And even we can understand, even the battle of Kurukshetra, how Krishna did some things which would have been seen to have been a little bit unbecoming. Right? He was very tricky. He took away, he arranged through Arjuna to take away those arrows which Bhishma had kept specifically for killing the Pandavas. He ordered Arjuna to kill Karna when he was off the chariot. The chariot wheels were broken and he was down trying to fix his chariot unarmed. Now kill him. He told Yudhishthira to tell a lie so that Drona could be removed from the battlefield. You know, he was a tricky character. You never, can't trust that Krishna. It's true what Rukmi is saying. He's a cheater, deceiver. He's always deceiving people. Anyway, we'll see what's said here in the purport. In his hysterical attack, Rukmi displays the very qualities he attributes. He displays, now this is the interesting thing, and this is again sometimes about human psychology. Rukmi displays the very qualities he attributes to Sri Krishna. Oftentimes, when we in our behavior or when we find fault in others, it's nothing but a reflection of what's actually in our own heart. Quite often. We won't make an absolute statement, but it's quite often the case. We've got it there and we see it in others. Because we've got that anatta, or that particular, tendency within ourselves. Quite often the case. I think psychologists are also familiar with that. So in this case, Rukmi is actually describing himself, but he's attributing it to Krishna. Every living being is part and parcel of the Lord and belongs to the Lord. Therefore, Rukmi was like a crow trying to steal the sacrificial offering meant for the enjoyment of the Lord. One time when Srila Prabhupada was talking to one, I think an Indian gentleman, I may be wrong, and the man was saying that, he was saying, yes, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, everything, but Krishna actually is a debaucher. He takes away other men's wives. He steals them. Practically, we can say, here he is. There she is, betrothed to marry the most noble personality of Shishupal. And Krishna came away and stole me right from the midst of all the Kshatriyas, right on a moment before her wedding. What the type of behavior is this? So, one can say that, and he takes away in the dead of night. He enjoys other men's wives in the dead of night. What type of example? It's a debaucher. Many people say that. Those who don't know the science, they may say that. So Prabhupada said that, there's many things, but what Prabhupada said more or less was that, Krishna, you accept Krishna as the supreme Bhagavan. He's supposed to be the supreme. If you accept him as the supreme, then what does that mean? It means, what is the meaning of supreme? Supreme person. Supreme controller. What does it mean? Everything belongs to him, right? Everything is meant in Bhagavad Gita. We see Bhaktaram Yagatapasam Sarvalokamaheshwam. Sarvalokamaheshwam. Everything belongs to him. Bhaktaram Yagatapasam. Everything is meant for his pleasure. So, if everything belongs to him and everything is meant for his pleasure, to whom does your wife belong? Well, yes, it's easy said, isn't it? To Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. So who is the debaucher? Who is enjoying that which doesn't belong to him? Everything's meant for Krishna's enjoyment. Everything belongs to Krishna. Therefore, you are the debaucher, not Krishna. The man was a little quiet. We can also understand that if we believe these things at all, that Krishna married 16,108 wives and he had so many relationships with gopis, if we believe this, where do you get that information from? Where is that information given? Pardon? Srimad Bhagavatam. So that means you're accepting the Srimad Bhagavatam as an authority, doesn't it? So if you accept that, you have to accept everything else that the Srimad Bhagavatam says. You can't, otherwise it's, I would say, like chicken. We want the egg, but you don't want to feed the chicken. You have to accept the whole Bhagavatam. You have to accept the whole Bhagavatam. And you have to understand that in the light of the actual context. You're all right, even if you're not believing Krishna as God, but still you have to accept this as no ordinary thing. Krishna married 16,108 wives and he had relationships with other men. Other wives rather, not other men, excuse me. the wives of other men. And this is disgusting. This is disgusting. Well, all right, but you'd like to do that. Oftentimes when we say that's because we would like to do that. We would love to have a relationship with so many other, we're all by nature enjoyer. Prabhupada said that, ultimately we're all trying to be purush in this world, men and women, we're all trying to be controllers and enjoyers, even though our nature is not really meant like that. So we're trying, male or female. So we all want to enjoy like that. But you have to see, we'd like to do that, but we can't do that because we're not God. Krishna's God. So in this next sentence, after explaining that he married 16,108 wives, it explains that he expanded himself 16,108 times. So if we can do that, fine. You can also do that. You can expand 16,108 times? Yes? Maybe you take 16,108 different births and marry 16,108 different women in 16,108 different births, but it's a little bit different. Oh, whatever it is. This is a complete difference. And not only that, but it wasn't just like expansions like robots, like machines. Each and every one of those expansions was behaving in completely, you can say, distinctive ways, individual to the next, although it was the same person. At the same time, it's very hard to that's why, Kenny, you don't see, but at the same time, we have one relationship maybe with somebody, and maybe you can have a bit of a relationship here and there, but not fully with anyone else, or in a particular mood with some people. But to display all the moods at once with 16,108 wives is quite inconceivable. So we have to accept the whole picture, not just a part of it. If you accept any of it, you have to accept the whole. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, let's see, text 25, and we'll finish. Rukmi said, "You are taking my sister just like a crow, Dvangshavat, steals a sacrificial offering. Today, adieu, O fool, I will take away your pride in being a false warrior and cheater. Today, O fool, I will take away your pride in being a false warrior and cheater." Now, interesting thing has come to mind, and even in our own lives, sometimes this happens in our dealings. Sometimes somebody criticizes us, chastises us, calls us ill names. They may be right in the absolute sense. Maybe it is due to their own uncontrolled minds or their own false egos or whatever reason. But ultimately, behind all these things, there is a higher reason. The supreme hand. No one can say anything like that without the Lord allowing it to happen. Without the will of the Lord, nothing can happen. So the devotee sees it differently. When someone may be chastising us in order to try to create some kind of friction or some kind of combat of some sort, or just to try to give us a hard time, and the devotee thinks, well, thank you, Krishna. Thank you, Krishna, for pointing that out. There's truth in that. Please show me what the meaning behind this is so that I can actually learn from what this kind person who's chastising me is trying to explain. He's just an instrument. You're trying, my Lord, I know what's happening. I have so many faults in my heart, and you're trying to point them out through this person, even if he is under the modes of nature. Nonetheless, he's actually my friend because he's actually helping me to understand where my faults are and how I can become a better, more submissive devotee. So the devotee all sees, even positively speaking, even the words of criticism or chastisement, we may not be guided directly by Sarasvati, but at least we can be understand things in relationship to what is favourable to us and how is related to Krishna, in terms of how we can learn from every situation we find ourselves in. There is no unfavourable situation to a devotee. Nothing is unfavourable, only to, of course, to turn the opposite way, but as long as we're trying to be Krishna conscious, every situation can be seen favourably. And even the unfavourable ones, in a sense, is Krishna also is teaching us in another way. It's not by chance, it's not thus by karma. Once one takes up devotional service, karma becomes a servant of Krishna's will to help the devotee to progress. Though sometimes the devotee appears to slip away from devotional service altogether. But that's just, maybe it takes a long time, but that's just another way of learning their lesson. It goes on. Vishwanath Chakravarti then concludes his purport. He says, today, O fool, I will take away your pride, Vivida. So Krishna's removing our pride too, also, through others. Sometimes when he chastises, when we get some chastisement, or we're made a little bit humiliated, or whatever it may be. We shouldn't go out of our way, of course, to be the instrument to impose that upon others. Prabhu, I'm being your friend, kind friend. You are proud. Therefore, I call you this, that, and the other. You rascal. You're just a nonsense. I'm going to make sure that everyone knows about it, and you're going to be humiliated. Because I love you so much, I want to reduce your pride. We shouldn't be the so-called instrument like that. This is orchestrated by Krishna. We don't have to be the initiator. The other meaning is, since my sister is Mahalakshmi and thus belongs to you, whether you steal her or not, wherever you go, she is your essence. Nice. After releasing my sister from you, I will bring her back to my house just as a crow steals the sacrificial butter. Please break the pride of this false warrior, myself. So indirectly what we're saying to Krishna, please break my pride. So this is a nice meditation. We can also, you know, feel like this with ourselves. Krishna, please break my pride. I've stolen away the sacrificial, or tried to, which belongs to you. I tried to steal Rukmini or Sita Devi from you. I'm like Ravana, trying to enjoy that which belongs to you. Now please break my pride with your mercy. Please break the pride of this warrior, myself, who is a fool, Munda, and a cheater, Mai. I'm the fool and the cheater. Turn the words around. See how these words can be applicable to us. And someone already asked the question the other day about these pastimes with the asuras appearing in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is, a transcendental literature, and we're hearing these words of these asuras, which we're not supposed to hear words of demons, so to speak. We do, of course, in one sense, sometimes we look at it. But this is how we hear it. We hear it through the acharyas. They explain it in a way which is for our benefit, and not just a story. I like Rukmi. Who do you like? You like Krishna or Rukmi? I prefer Rukmi. Yeah. No. I like his worse. I feel the same way. How do you feel? You have to understand it. It's maybe he's right, you know. Yeah, maybe Krishna's right. You have to hear it from the acharyas, those who realize the subject matter. And then we can understand the actual meaning and the actual application of these transcendental pastimes and the transcendental instructions given here in Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll finish there. Any questions or comments? Literatures,
and
his teachings. I think Hari Swari Prabhupada talked a little bit. I don't know, maybe you missed. You missed it, yeah. He was explaining, and I can't remember verbatim. Maybe someone can remember how Prabhupada was talking about how, when he was in Vrindavan, before he went to the West, how he had the personal darshan of Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, and how they assured him that you know, they would be there. They were helping him. They were empowering him to present this teaching of Krishna consciousness in a way which would be digestible to the audience which he would be communicating with. And he also, on another occasion, I know Hari Swari Prabhupada didn't mention that one, but he mentioned something almost the same. And one time, Prabhupada was in his rooms. And Subhag Maharaj told me this a long, long time ago. I don't know if it was he who came into the room, but someone came into the room of Srila Prabhupada when he was reading his Krishna book, and he said, "This book is so wonderful." And of course, you know, Prabhupada wrote it. Prabhupada said, "No, it is not. That's not why it's wonderful. It's wonderful because I didn't write it. Krishna wrote this book. I didn't write it. He's an instrument. This is the real means to write transcendental literatures. It is not really within the realm of a conditioned soul or someone who has simply learned the topic by exercise, but it's actually direct atyaksha vadamandaranam. The vision is given by Krishna, and it's almost like it's written by the Lord himself when it becomes an instrument. I think Arjuna said that in the Bible. Krishna said that. What's that verse? Nivitramatur bhagasava sachin, is it? In the Bhagavad Gita, you just become an instrument, Arjuna. So the pure devotees are—that's their mood. They're simply like instruments. They're not that they become like a machine, but they're voluntarily offering themselves for the service of the Lord. So the Lord works through them. The pure devotees, the previous acharyas, work through them in fulfilling the mission which they have to undergo. So this transparency is very, very deep thing. And I got that deep realization one time reading the works of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which are voluminous. Not all of them are in English. Tremendous. When you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, even if you don't agree, you have to, if you look at it from a realistic or logical point of view, one would have to accept that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not of this world. No human being in the years that remain on this planet could be able to. I've never heard of anyone, in my knowledge, which is of course maybe not very great, but I've never heard of anyone who could do what Bhaktivinoda could do, and present things in such an amazing way that he's seeing the future, he knows the past, and he's living in the present, and he's putting all in such a way that is relevant to all time, place, and circumstances. And in literatures like Jaiva Dharma and Chaitanya Sikshamrita, how he's so clearly seems to understand everything. It's not just presenting some philosophy which is impractical and applicable to most people without very much direction, but he presents things in such a way that you can actually see yourself and where you're at, and understand what steps to take next. He goes into the Varnashram system, he goes into social intercourse, he goes into family dealings, he goes into every aspect of living in this world and relating it all to Krishna, even down to the details of types of festivals that will help different types of persons to awaken their Krishna consciousness. birthday parties, you know, village parties, and how they all had their little parts to play. It makes everything so, you can say, accommodatable. It's just inconceivable how he can. I mean, he's written so many books and so many songs, and how he takes us through, as we mentioned earlier, practically speaking. We may be on a low rung, but I can understand from those who are on higher rungs that he takes us through all the various emotions which spontaneously spring up in one's heart as one goes through life, as one goes through, especially on the path of devotion. He's seeing it. He sees everything. He's got the whole Encyclopedia Britannica of life itself at his fingertips. And it's not just, you know, it's all there. It's not like, you know, you have to, and then back to that point. It's inconceivable how he puts it all together. I'm quoting from every type of scripture you can imagine. These are not ordinary persons. Not ordinary, just like Vyasadeva. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is. Prabhupada never revealed to us who he actually is. He's appearing in this world, but his actual spiritual identity he never clearly revealed. These are not, we're called Nitya Buddhas. They are not Nitya Buddhas. They are Nitya Siddhas. They're Uttama. Not just Uttamas either, they're Nitya Siddhas. They're eternal associates of the Lord who come into this world simply to give Krishna consciousness. They don't come into this world like we do. We're trying to piece it together. We're trying to practice some God consciousness, trying to understand our relationship with Krishna, trying to understand the philosophy and so on and so forth, trying to explain it, trying to apply it. We have our ups and downs. But these Nitya Siddhas are not like that. They're self-realized souls already. And they're just coming. And to present that knowledge of the transcendence in this phenomenal world, they become instrumental. The Lord, as Prabhupada, when he first arrived in Boston, Hari Swaroopu was mentioning yesterday, the beautiful poem, Markinaya Bhagavat Dharma. I'll just read one or two couplets from that Markinaya Bhagavat Dharma. And I completely agree with what he said, what Prabhupada said it even, that we should all regularly read these and sing these songs regularly. These are very beautiful. Listen to this. You've heard it before, but we can hear it again. I'll just read the English. Somehow or another, O Lord, how will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate, unqualified, and the most fallen. Therefore I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. Somehow or another, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure, as you like. O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message, so if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel gladdened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance. Make me dance, O Lord. Make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta, and now if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhaktivedanta. Signed, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Boston. This is their mood. And this is how Krishna's mercy flows. And we're all, in a sense, this is applicable to all of us. The pure devotees, they feel this, no doubt. But they're also teaching us. They're teaching us how to receive Krishna's mercy. To understand it, everything is by the mercy of Krishna. We cannot achieve anything without his mercy. So if we get proud and thinking, I'm the doer, I'm this and I'm that. Anyway, the whole poem is quite long. We're not going to read it all. It's just a few of the verses. Read these poems of Prabhupada. It helps us to understand his mood, and understand the mood that we as followers of Srila Prabhupada should try to follow in the footsteps of. Now, there's one more question or two? Comment?